EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And a dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from tonight. I am your host, Nick Hunter, and if you've had an encounter and you would like to come on the show and share your experience, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Or you can contact me via our website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. Today's guest is R.O. from Northern California, and he has had some very interesting experiences with a UFO that he witnessed on a cruise ship on the coast of Mexico in 2007, and some of his wife's experiences that has involved seeing people that have passed on after nearly losing her own life on the operating table. And a final visit from a family pet that reincarnated as another cat. R.O. coming up in a moment. And our witness submission is from Matt from Alberta, Canada, with two of his UFO sightings. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show.
Hi there. This is Matt Kay from Alberta, Canada, and this is my voice submission for UFO Chronicles Podcast. Thank you for the bumper sticker you sent me. I absolutely love it, and it's been a blast listening to all the shows, all everybody's experiences from around the world. I'm an avid believer, so I love to listen to other people's stories on the subject. I wanted to talk about my two only UFO sightings that I've had in my life. The first one that I want to talk about happened when I was very young, about 4 or 5 years old. It's actually my second earliest memory. I'm 32 years old now. So this would have been in 1992 or 1993. I really wish I could remember the exact date of this UFO sighting, but it's my second earliest memory. It happened when I was sitting in the passenger seat of my aunt's Honda Civic late at night on the highway, and we were about 2 kilometers outside of Calgary, Alberta, a modest city of about 1 million people. Big enough so that there's a vast array of city lights when you're coming in from out of town. I could barely see over the dash of this Honda Civic, and I was looking ahead up the road where I could see all the city lights on the ground, and they were actually reflecting off the very low cloud cover we had that night. It was very cloudy. The sky was essentially just one big cloud with a very low ceiling. You could see a visible line very low in the sky where the clouds were, and the city lights were reflecting off the clouds, lighting up the area somewhat. As I was just looking at the city lights, a giant triangular-shaped beam of light shined down out of the sky and went all the way down to the ground over the city of Calgary. And I'm 2 kilometers on the, I was about 2 kilometers on the highway coming in from out of town. I was pretty far away from this thing, but it was so huge and so bright, there's no way you could miss it. I haven't seen anything like it since. Now, at first I thought that this beam of light was a spotlight. I knew even that young, I think I had seen in a large city before, sometimes they'll have an event and they'll shine a spotlight up into the sky. That's what I thought I was looking at first, but it didn't take me long to realize that that's not what this was. I knew that this could not be a light that was shining from the ground because of the shape. It was triangular shaped. From the horizon, it was wide at the bottom, and it very slowly tapered up to a sharp point to where the point of the light ended right below the cloud cover. Not too far below the cloud cover. It was almost as if a craft came down below the clouds and shined a laser down at the ground. And this beam of light, I call it a laser because that's the only intensity of light that I have seen that matched this, what I saw that night, is in high-powered lasers where the photons are arranged in a line to make a visible beam. But this was intense like laser light, but it got wider as it got down towards the ground. I'd never quite seen laser light do that before. I could not see any visible craft because it was so dark below the cloud line, but what I did see was that golden laser light, very intense, reflect off the clouds in the sky. And it was a different color than the city lights. All the city lights were pretty much the same color, either white or amber, but this laser that shined out of the sky was a deep golden, twinkling, and I had never seen a light that intense outside of high-powered lasers that I use for astronomy. That's the only place I've seen light this bright, that intense. But this light, hundreds of feet into the sky, I'm 2 kilometers away from this thing, and I'm just looking at a triangle beam of golden laser light, far more intense than any other light around. It lit up the surrounding area with golden light, and this beam of light only lasted for about 20 to 30 seconds before it shot up into the clouds and into the sky in a straight line, directly vertically. And it didn't turn off like a light bulb. It moved. I saw that triangle beam of light in 1 or 2 frames of my vision shoot up vertically, so that at one point I could actually see the bottom of this laser. It had been touching the ground before, but as it shot up, I saw the bottom of the laser go up with it. So it wasn't like a light turning off. And I turned to my aunt, and she said she saw it too, so I'm glad I wasn't the only one that saw that. There was actually an article in the newspaper the next day about a sighting, so that confirms that a lot of other people saw it too. I really wish I could remember the exact date this happened so I could look back in the records and read what I can about it. So that was my first UFO sighting, my second earliest memory. And my second UFO sighting happened about 4 years ago. We were camping outside of town in small town Alberta, and my cousin had lent me a trailer to use, small trailer, and our friends that we were camping with had a larger trailer with a generator, and they let us run an extension cord from their generator into our trailer so I could charge my phone and stuff. So that night we're camping, and that night at about 9, my phone dies, and I go and I put it on charge in the trailer. I visually confirm on my phone that it's charging, so I know it's working. And I left it charging in the trailer for about an hour. An hour later, I was sky watching, and I seen an object in the sky that I'm not really sure I can call an object because I didn't really see anything solid. What I saw was a point of light that was slightly smaller than the moon in size. And the light was solid white light in the center, and then it got very opaque in a perfect circle all around it to where the light just dimmed out and disappeared. So it made it very hard to tell if there was a solid object or there. I'm looking at seemingly an orb of light. And it moved in a straight line, but I'm an avid astronomer. I've seen Jupiter and its moons through a 6-foot telescope. I've looked at the moon through a telescope on several occasions. I'm I've been a part of the astronomy club here in town. I own several high-powered lasers that I use for astronomy. I know what a satellite looks like. It's a very small point of light. It's a reflection of light, and it moves in a straight line. This moved far too slow to be a satellite, because it took about 20 minutes for this thing to disappear, moving in a straight line until it hit the horizon. After seeing this strange light in the sky, a perfect white circle of light that was opaque around the edges, I rushed into my trailer to get a picture of this thing. I didn't care if my phone camera was good enough or not. I was going to zoom all the way in and I was going to take a picture of this thing, because I had never seen a light like that in the sky in all my years of astronomy. So I run into the trailer, I pick up my phone. It had charged to 1% after more than an hour. And I ran outside and I checked my friend's generator, and I checked the cord. I checked my phone. It was charging, but it was at 1% after an hour and a half of charging time, confirming that it was charging when I plugged it in. So that kind of confirmed for me that there was something out of the ordinary, because that's the only time I've charged my phone for that long and it didn't charge. And I've heard so many stories of objects draining batteries dry on people. That confirmed it to me that there was something out of the ordinary going on. I've never had my phone die that fast while it was still plugged in. So thank you for listening to my submission. And I love the podcast. And yeah, UFO Chronicles podcast. You rock, man. Peace out.
And welcome to the show.
How are you doing, Nick?
Thank you for coming on today, and all the way from California.
That's correct. I'm from Northern California, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
It is great to have you on today. Now, you have a UFO sighting for us today and some paranormal experiences?
Yes, I do. I've got, I guess, three basic stories to lay out. The first is I have a sighting of a group of UFOs that I saw whilst I was on a cruise ship heading south toward the Panama Canal off the coast of Mexico. And my wife was with me at the time, but she wasn't a witness. I was the only one who saw this. And I have some paranormal experiences that my wife has seen and has related to me a couple of while we've been married, and that she's told me about directly afterwards, which these are things that she has been experiencing ever since. She was undergoing surgery at a time before I met her, and she had a bad reaction to the anesthetic on the operating table and had stopped breathing for, I guess, well over a minute and was close to dying. And after they brought her back, ever since then, she's had occasions to see people who have died unexpectedly, and certainly not something that she ever seeks out, but these happen to her. And then the third story I want to tell you about is a beloved cat that we had, who we'd had for about 11 years, and we had to put down shortly after he was diagnosed with cancer. Ended up coming back to us in the form of another cat about 7 months later. And it sounds weird, but once I lay out all the details, people will understand why we both kind of came to the conclusion and why we don't have any doubt that this occurred. So I just want to give you just, I guess, a little background on the story of us, so kind of you know how this all came together. I first met my wife when I was working in a bar up in San Francisco. It's about 1992. She was already established as a nurse in a local hospital, and a group of her friends were taking her out, and they brought her down to the bar that I was working. And I immediately noticed her and was instantly smitten with her. And did everything I could to get her phone number so I could call her. And she really wasn't having it. But at one point, she allowed me to give her my number. So I did, figuring I would never hear from her again. She called me about a week later to tell me that she really wasn't interested. But the mistake she made was getting me on the phone. So at that point, I was able to talk her into going out to lunch, which we did, which turned out to dinner, which turned into a movie, and we started dating. And uh, really kind of been together ever since. Now, at the time, I was, you know, she had already been, as I said, established as a nurse. I was just a high school graduate who was tending bar. But I kind of wanted to, you know, improve myself and get the rest of my life going. So I started going to school. I ended up going to night school and gradually got enough credits to transfer to university, which I did. I went to the University of California and graduated from there, went on to law school. Graduated from law school, passed the bar exam, and got a job as an attorney. When we first started moving in together, first moved in together, she was living in this little apartment in Daly City, south of San Francisco. I moved in with her. Once I started going to school, we ended up, we decided that we needed a little bigger space. So we started looking for a house, and we found one in a small tract housing community a little bit further south in a suburban area that had been built up in the 50s to house the post-war population that had started to expand into the suburbs at the time. And got a cat, moved into the house with the cat. I finished up my schooling there. And once I graduated from law school and got a job as an attorney, it was down in San Jose, which is a bit further away. So we looked for another house, put us, I guess, equidistant from our job. She was still working up in San Francisco and I was working in the South Bay. So we found a nice home about halfway between the communities. When we first started going out, obviously we didn't have a lot of money because I was in school and, you know, she was the only income. And so we really didn't have a lot of, we didn't go on, a lot of long trips or, a lot of fancy vacations. But once both of us started bringing in some money, we had a little bit more discretionary income. We decided to splurge on a cruise to the Panama Canal and decided to, kind of do that because we'd heard so much about it. The ports of call looked very nice. The trip through the canal also looked really nice. And since we had a little bit more money to spend, we went all out and we got a cabin with a balcony, which was just like living the life for us at this time. I mean, this was more than I'd ever thought that we'd ever be able to do. And but the one thing that we didn't reckon on was that this particular cruise line catered to what you would call an older crowd. I think the average age of the customer was about 75 or so. I'm pretty sure we were the youngest adult passengers on the ship. So around evening time, everything kind of wound down and closed up. And by 10 o'clock, nothing was happening at all. But I would just, at that point, go out on the balcony and just enjoy the breeze and just kind of take in the experience, the airs and just the atmosphere down there at this time of year. This was early September, so it was, late summer. And the ship was cruising down off of the coast of San Diego and then on to Mexico. And it was just fantastic. I mean, the breezes were magical. The ocean smelled like perfume. There were seabirds flying around at all hours of the night. And so I would just hang out on the balcony and just take it all in because this was something unlike anything I had ever been able to experience before. The cabin that we had was forward on the ship, so toward the front of the ship. And I would lay out on the chaise lounge, just stretched out facing aft, facing toward the rear of the ship and just kind of, watching the lights of the ship and watching the stars and so forth and just taking it all in. One night I was out there. I think we just crossed the border and we're off the coast of Mexico. And I looked to the south and I saw what I thought initially to be a small flight of seabirds that were coming up on the ship. Didn't think anything of it at first because this was something that I'd gotten used to seeing both day and night. It was not uncommon at all for seabirds of all type to kind of fall in formation behind the ship and trail it for a bit. And at night, they'd be illuminated by the ship's lights. But as soon as I saw these particular, what I thought were birds, all of a sudden, three things kind of clicked at the same time. First off, I thought, and noticed that they weren't flying like birds. They were gliding very smoothly and very fast, and they were coming up very quickly on the ship. And the second thing I noticed almost at the same time was that they weren't illuminated by the ship at all. They were kind of giving off their own lights. They were luminous in and of themselves, which was odd. I mean, it took me a little bit to kind of like register that. But I noticed that, and also, and then I noticed at the same time that they didn't look like birds at all. They were orbs. They were dots. So all of these three things kind of clicked at the same time. And I thought, verbalized in my head, those aren't birds. As soon as that thought registered in my head, like the instant it happened, these five objects all of a sudden coalesced into one group and then shot directly up overhead. And not just overhead of the ship, but like directly over my head, like is almost as if they were positioned deliberately right over where I was lying on the ship. And they gathered together in this tight little cluster and immediately executed a series of pirouettes in a clockwise spiral motion. And it was, you were spiraling around each other, but not at the same time. Like the innermost dot did a tight little twirl and then stopped. And then the two dots on the next layer around it did the same thing. They swirled around each other and then stopped. And then the two on the outermost ring did the same thing. They twirled around each other and stopped in a quick, rapid succession. They executed this maneuver, I'd say about two or three times really fast, stopped, and then all of a sudden they just, all of them just zipped off to the right, which would have been eastward toward land, so fast that they left streaks of light behind, like shooting stars. This entire encounter, from the time that I first noticed what I thought were birds to them zipping off to the to the land toward Mexico, I'd say maybe lasted about 10 to 15 seconds, no more than that. But it was so vivid and so stunning that there was no question in my mind. I knew exactly what I'd seen. I mean, I thought, my God, I just seen some UFOs. I was really excited. I bounced out of my chair and opened the sliding door and went into my wife, who was kind of dozing in the bed. And I shook her and I said, hon, I just saw some UFOs. And she's like, yeah, sure you did. No, you saw something else. There's no way that you saw UFOs. Now, my wife, as you will learn, is not a skeptic. I mean, she's had paranormal experiences of her own, but she's never had any UFO experiences or seen them or known anybody who has herself. But she believes that people have. She believes they're out there, and she knows that people have seen them. She just didn't believe that I had seen them. She was just kind of doing her wifely duty by reacting with skepticism to anything her husband would say along these lines. So I just couldn't convince her of that. The next day, I tried to make some discreet inquiries about the what I had seen to the crew. I went up to the bridge even, and I tried to talk with one of the sailors who was on duty, and just kind of made some questions like, hey, anybody last night see any lights or anything like that? And he was like, you mean stars? Like, no, not stars. I mean, unusual lights, anything like that. And kind of gives me this quizzical look like, you mean aliens? And at that point, I'm like, realized what I was starting to sound like. And I said, never mind. I'll go find the buffet or something. So I kind of gave that up, and I really didn't make any more inquiries about that or say anything too much about it for the rest of the cruise, and because I just didn't want anybody to think I was nuts. But I knew what I had seen. But I had I had the hardest time convincing my wife about what I had seen. And for years afterwards, I began to doubt it myself, because I knew what I'd seen, but you go back over it and what it's like without any kind of affirmation or any confirmation from anybody else, you start to wonder, like, yeah, am I making too much of this? Did I read something into this? I mean, I knew I hadn't, because I wasn't looking for UFOs that night. I wasn't looking for anything, but I knew what I'd seen, but I still, as the years went on, I began to doubt myself. And that happened until, I guess, last year, when the History Channel aired this six-part, limited series that was hosted by Lou Elizondo, a government official who had left Project ATIP, which was the Aerial Threat Identification and Investigation Program or something like that. And he had opened this series by focusing on the famous Tic Tac UFOs that were captured by the gun cameras of planes off of the Nimitz strike force that had been training in that very same area of the ocean in 2004. What my sighting was in 2007, so this was 3 years later. But he, I mean, his investigation didn't just—he didn't just talk to the pilots who had seen the and recorded these images themselves. He talked to various members of the crew members aboard the various ships. He talked to radar operators who had seen fleets of UFOs descending from the sky and just disappearing into the ocean. He talked to sonar operators who were in touch with their counterparts aboard submarines in the strike force, who talked about unusual objects below the surface. And he also talked to a crewman, and eventually, I think, even brought him onto his team to continue the investigation, who was on deck the night of the sighting. The sighting occurred during the day, I guess, which is when the F-14s were vectored toward the objects. And that night, I guess before word of this encounter had spread throughout the fleet, there was a sailor who was on deck of one of the accompanying ships. I believe it was the Princeton. And he had seen lights in the sky himself that he couldn't explain. And they put up an animated recreation of what he had seen. And it was somewhat lower in the sky, and the movements were slower than I had witnessed. They were kind of, you know, more leisurely, where the ones that I had seen were very fast. But in all other respects, it was exactly the same thing that I had seen in the same skies over the same waters 3 years earlier. And I was watching the show with my wife, and as soon as that came up on the screen, I sat right up in my chair and I said, "You see that? See what's on the screen right now? That's exactly what I saw that night. Now, do you believe me?" And at that point, she finally grudgingly, I guess, came to understand that what I had seen really was real. And it didn't just happen that night. Apparently, it's been happening over those waters for some time. So got the affirmation that I needed. Hey, I'm not crazy. I saw what I saw. I'm not the only one who's seen these things. This really did happen. Over the years, I kind of wondered about a couple of things. Like, why did they seem to react to my recognizing them? Like, why did they seem to be performing right for my benefit, like going right over my head? I mean, I was probably the only one still awake who wasn't working. But that kind of struck me a little bit as odd, too, because I didn't even say anything. I just kind of, you know, mentally register what they were. And as soon as I did, they decided to put on a little show, it seemed like. And I wondered about that, but I've been, you know, listening to your pod for some time, Nick, and I've noticed that quite a few of your guests have had similar experiences with lights and objects in the sky that seem to understand when they've been recognized, even if nobody says anything. It's almost as if they have some kind of a telepathic ability to pick up on people spotting them and registering them in the sky. And that, you know, having listened to that, that kind of makes a little bit more sense now. Does that make any sense to you?
Absolutely. I think they want to be seen. They want to be recognized.
Yeah, no, these certainly, it was almost as if they were testing to see if anybody was alert. And as soon as somebody saw them, they're like, okay, we got one. You know, let's show them what we can do. That's kind of how it played out, it seemed to me, in retrospect. But I'm glad I'm not the only one who feels that way. It's really odd.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know if anyone else on the ship, maybe any guests, had seen anything like that.
I would like to know, but as I said, most of the people who were on that ship were probably well past their bedtime. I did casually strike up a conversation with somebody who was closer to my age, and I asked of him if he had seen anything or had at any time during the cruise, and didn't get any response. And, you know, he at least didn't think I was crazy, but I think I was probably the only one aboard that whole ship that saw anything that night, or perhaps during that whole cruise. Yeah. But and now at least my wife believes me. So that's all that matters.
That's the important thing.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. this coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
Yeah, so about my wife now. As I said, she's retired now, but she was a clinical nurse for 35 years. She worked labor and delivery. And she's a very down-to-earth person. She's very science-oriented, well-educated. She has a master's in microbial genetics. She's very heavy on data. She doesn't, this isn't a hobby of hers. She's not really into studying the paranormal or ufology or anything like that. But there was a time when, before I met her, when she had to undergo surgery under general anesthesia. And she had a bad reaction to the anesthesia and went into anaphylactic shock on the operating table. And while she was in that condition, her vitals pretty much seized up and she stopped breathing for over a full minute. And I guess had what you call flatlined on the table. They were able to bring her back, fortunately, of course. And after she came out of that experience and had that near-death experience, there have been several times when she has seen people who have passed away. She doesn't like it. It's not pleasant for her. It absolutely freaks her out. She doesn't like talking about it. But it's happened. It happened before I met her, and it's happened a couple of times while we've been together. She worked in for a while before I met her. She worked at Kapi'olani Hospital in Hawaii and had a couple of experiences there. One in which she was in a restroom, standing in front of a mirror, and a person appeared behind her in the mirror. A Hawaiian gentleman dressed in traditional Hawaiian garb, wearing a floral crown on his head, looking very much like old Hawaiian royalty, I guess before the pre-colonization days. And he was standing right behind her in the mirror, and she quickly turned around and the person wasn't there anymore. And she walked through an old unit there and that had been closed, unbeknownst to her. She didn't know this, that the unit had been closed, but she was trying to find her way out of the hospital. And walked through this closed unit. All the beds were made up, but there was nobody on staff. But as she walked by one of the beds, she noticed the covers were moving. And she got closer and closer and gave it a look. And there was somebody that she couldn't see that was, turning and tossing and turning under the covers of one of the beds. And, of course, that freaked her out, and she left. Since I've known her, there was one time when she used to work nights. Her entire career, she worked 7-hour night shifts, 12-hour night shifts. I'm sorry. So 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And so she would come home really tired. One night when I was one day she came home. It must have been a Saturday because I had not left for work that day. So she came home and she was just ashen, had all the blood drained out of her face. And I said, I thought she was ill. I said, honey, you OK? And she said, I saw Mrs. Ogawa last night. Now, that's not this person's name. I'm going to change the patient's name out of respect for the family and so forth. But I said, well, who's Mrs. Ogawa? And she said, this is a patient of mine that died during childbirth several years ago. I said, what? I said, yeah, I was just making my rounds and I saw her walk across the hall, just as real as your eyes. She just slowly walked across the hall into a recovery room. And then I looked into the recovery room and she was lying on the gurney, looking exactly like she had after she had, unfortunately died hemorrhaging because they couldn't stop the bleeding during the childbirth. And that completely, completely freaked her out. And she didn't know what to do about it, but she didn't say anything about it. But she came home and told me what had happened. And during her next shift, I guess she and a couple of her coworkers did a little research. And they had determined that when she had seen Mrs. Ogawa, this was 10 years to the day after she had passed away. So this was like the 10th anniversary of her dying in childbirth. And she made herself known to her. That was an experience that she, to this day, she doesn't like to talk about. Another time. So for the tract house that we had lived in initially when I was first, going to school and before, and first started working, it was a modest split level. All the houses in the neighborhood pretty much had the same design. If they were on flat land, they were ranchers. And if they were on an incline, they were split. So the upper level consisted of a main bedroom, which faced the street, and then a little hallway across from which was the spare bedroom, which faced the backyard, the bathroom. And then there was a little short flight of stairs, about 7 stairs down to the lower level, which featured the kitchen, dining room, living area, and the study. The spare bedroom, which faced the back, we didn't have an attic or a basement. So we never even set this up as a spare bedroom. This was kind of like our junk room. It was our storage area. We put all the boxes and everything that we hadn't unpacked yet, that they just kind of stacked up there. Yeah, and everything we didn't want to put in another area of the house. And when we had gotten our cat, which you'll hear about later on, he was an indoor cat. We didn't let him outside. So, cats like to go off and be by themselves a lot of time. This was his favorite place to go. We didn't spend any time there, so this was his room. And when he wanted to go just kind of be alone and isolate, he would just hang out there. It was one of his favorite spots. Now, we also had a backyard, which had a slope to the back and a fence. And the neighbors behind us had this just humongous cypress tree, which was right up against our fence and was almost completely overgrown into our yard. Everything about this tree was pretty much on our property. And it was dropping branches constantly and, putting a lot of our yard in the shade. We tried our best to address the situation with the neighbors, but they were just like, hey, it's not our problem. We're not going to do anything about it. And, the law in this area is kind of a grayish. I mean, there's certain steps you could take, but if you go too far, you can be liable for damage. So we finally just decided to it's not worth it. We'll just let it ride for now. Well, we had gotten this house at a foreclosure sale. I mean, my wife had gotten it actually because, I didn't have any money at the time. But it had been owned previously by an elderly woman who was the original owner, who had lived in it since the 50s. And as the years went on, she got ill. She, came down with Alzheimer's and had other health problems and couldn't stay in the house anymore. So her family took her out and put the house up for sale. And we were the next occupants. We had surmised, that over the years she had ultimately passed away based on the experience that of what I'm about to tell you. But one day when I wasn't in the house, my wife was walking, from the bedroom to the bathroom, had to pass by the doorway of the spare bathroom. And while she was spare bedroom, rather. And while she was passing by the spare bedroom, she looked and she saw this old woman, white hair, wearing some kind of a house dress, just kind of like hunched over, standing at the window, looking out the window toward the backyard, toward the tree that was hanging over our back fence. It was just a very vivid, very real, like nothing transparent about her, like this person was just standing there. And she stopped, of course, and just was just kind of shocked that somebody was in her house and blinked. And when she, blinked a couple of times, the woman was gone. So she was just there momentarily, but she has no doubt about what she saw. Well, that night, a huge storm came through the area and blew down the tree but it took down the fence behind the tree and basically solved our problem, because now the neighbors had no choice but to fix the fence, and the tree was gotten rid of. So we kind of surmised that this was the previous owner, who was standing at the window kind of letting us know what was about to happen. And the odd thing about this afterwards was the cat, which we had which we had living with us, who up until this point had loved this room and had used this as one of his favorite hideouts, never went in that room again. He never set foot in it. I mean, he didn't freak out or anything about it, but he just refused to go in. This just wasn't his room anymore. So we think he kind of picked up on that. Those are just a couple of the experiences that she has had. She hasn't had anything recently, but because she's been home, especially during this crisis. But this is not something that she really likes to talk about. And when I told her I was going to be telling you this story, she wanted to make sure that she was nowhere around when I was doing that. So, yeah, those are her experiences. Okay. So on to the cat. Now, this is going to take a little bit of time to talk, because I think it's the most unusual. And I don't think people would really understand how we feel this way until we get the whole story. So when we first moved into the house, we had gotten together kind of late in life. We didn't get married for a while either. But when we first moved into the house, we didn't have any kids, but we wanted to get a pet. So we went to the San Francisco SPCA and looking for a cat. We both loved love cats. And the first one we saw just pretty much leapt out at both of us. He was this very young kitten. I think he was around 5 weeks old, black and white tuxedo cat, American short hair, and just... Yeah, for some reason, we both just instantly were drawn to him, he was really drawn to us. He was from the beginning, he was a really smart, engaging, he's playful, just loving, just a really good animal, good companion. And so we adopted him, and we took him home, and he was instantly a part of our life. And, as I said, we didn't let him outdoors, but he kept us company indoors. The wife, when I was going to school, he would be hanging out with me, doing my studies, getting in the way of my assignments. The wife would work nights, and when she would come home, she'd have a hard time sleeping because, no matter how long you work a night shift, it's really hard to get used to sleeping in the day. I think anybody who's worked nights can attest to that, because we're not nocturnal people. We're diurnal creatures. It's not wired in us to sleep during the day. But he would always help her do that. He would just curl up right beside her and help her get to sleep. After I started working, we would I would work long hours at my job down in San Jose, and she would work the night shift. And there were times when we would only communicate with each other via the notes that we would leave as we were leaving out the door for our respective jobs. And he was the bond between us. He'd keep me company at night, he'd keep her company in the day. And he was one of my best friends. But she absolutely doted on him. We both had pets before, but this, nothing like this. He was just a really, just a good companion, a good member of the family to have. Well, around the time he got to be 10 years old, we noticed a lump on his right hind leg. And we took him to the, and it was, obviously it was giving him some problems. We took him to the vet, and the vet diagnosed him with a tumor. And not just any kind of a tumor. This, unfortunately, was caused by the rabies vaccination that all pets had to get back then. I guess at the time that he had been born, there was a strain of the vaccine that was being used that caused this injection site sarcoma in a small but not insignificant percentage of the animals that received it. I mean, the vet that we were using at the time hated this particular brand, refused to use it, and I think it's since been discontinued. But he was one of the unlucky ones, unfortunately. And the vet told us we had a couple of different options. We could either do surgery, which had a good but not perfect chance of success of removing the whole thing. It was going to require some painful rehab and some staples. Or to be really certain, we could amputate his leg. And for obvious reasons, we just didn't want to do that. So we opted for the surgery. He underwent the surgery. The vet told us afterwards that she wasn't able to get the whole thing. She was able to get almost all of it, but a portion of the tumor had attached itself to his leg, and she couldn't extract it. So the best thing we could do was to help him rehab it and hope for the best and hope that it doesn't come back. So we went through all of this painful rehab period. He walked around with a severe limp for a while, was in pain. We gave him the medication. Eventually, the staples got removed, and he seemed to recover. But sure enough, about 11 months later, it came back. And it came back really fast. and really aggressively. And at that point, the vet told us that there's really nothing that she could do. The end was going to come. We were going to see him significantly decline, and at some point, we were going to have to make the call. So that's what we did. We just kind of bided our time, and a few months later, it got to the point where we knew what we had to do. He wasn't eating. He wasn't drinking. He was obviously in pain. He wasn't anywhere near his normal, cheerful, perky self. He wasn't keeping us company anymore. He was just he was suffering, and so we knew what we had to finally go in and put him down. Anybody who's ever had to do this can tell you what a searing experience it can be. There's almost nothing like, I mean, next to seeing a family member pass away, I think it's probably one of the worst things anybody can go to, especially if you've had something like this for an animal like this for a while. But we were determined to see it all the way through. I mean, we weren't just going to drop him off. We wanted to actually go into the room and just kind of be with him there at the end. We thought we owed that to him. I can tell you now, it's something I'm never going to do again, because I didn't really anticipate how bad it would be. But we brought him in. We laid him out. He seemed to understand what was happening. The vet rigged up the injection. And asked us if we wanted to say any final words. And, we did. And my wife said her goodbyes. And that's the last thing that I did. And I don't know why I did this. I still can't explain what made me do this. But I leaned into him and I said, come back to us. Come back to us, Riz. And then this was literally the last thing that he heard before the anesthetic was administered. So, the vet put him to sleep, and we stumbled out of there. Just kind of tried to get through the rest of the day. We went out, had a listless lunch, came back to the house. My wife went in the house immediately. There was a neighbor out trying to, talk us up to ask us how it went. She really wasn't in the mood to talk, but I lingered outside and I let him know, what we had done. And I went in afterwards. And as soon as I walked in, she was like, you won't believe this. When I walked in, I heard somebody pawing the litter box because we had left his litter box upstairs. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, come here, look. And so I walked upstairs, and sure enough, there were paw prints in the sand in the litter box. And I know that he hadn't used it because he hadn't eaten or drink. Hadn't had anything to eat or drink in several days. So there was nothing in it, just a couple of paw prints. I said, you heard this? I said, yeah. As soon as I walked in, I heard, the sound of the, getting ready to use a box. And I thought, this is really bizarre. And I went back to, what I told him. I said, hey, come back to us. I thought, okay, well, maybe that's what he did. Maybe he just made one last visit before he moved on. I didn't think anything of it. She was a little visibly shook, but we went about the grieving process. A few months passed, about 7 months passed. We never even kind of found it in our hearts to put away all of the stuff. Everything was kind of right where we left it. And one Friday night, about 7 months later, my wife was working. She was working the night shift. And this was actually early Friday morning, about 5 o'clock in the morning. I was woken out of a sound sleep. Now, to put this in perspective, at that time, of my life, at 5 o'clock in the morning, I was dead to the world. My job was very, very stressful. I had a lot of serious cases on. It would take me a long time to turn off my brain when I'd go to sleep the night before. Things twirling around in my mind. And sometimes I wouldn't drop off until, it was 1 o'clock in the morning or so, 2 o'clock in the morning. I would need the alarm clock to wake me up at 6 to be sure that I could get to work on time. So at 5, I was dead. Nothing would wake me up. But I woke up to a cat meowing. And it sounded as if it was right in the room, and I sat bolt upright in bed. I came wide awake right away. I couldn't understand it. I thought at first I was dreaming. Did I dream that? And then I heard it again, when I was awake, and this time I could tell it was coming from outside. I heard this a couple of times more. It was very loud. It was very insistent, and I've heard animals outside before. We live in a suburban area that has wildlife. It's got raccoons. It's got other, stray cats that wander around, but I've never heard anything like this. So I stumbled downstairs, walked out the door, turned on the porch light. It was still dark. It was a very foggy, gloomy, very moist and cold morning. the fog was so thick you couldn't really see down the street more than a house or two. I couldn't see anything. I heard the meow again. I walked to the end of the driveway, and out of the fog trots this cat. It's a young cat. I could tell right away. It's looks to be not even a year old, and it literally jumped right into my arms as I bent down to kind of see what was going on. I could tell it was somebody's cat because it had a collar, a little purple collar on it. So it wasn't a stray, but it was still a kitten, and I didn't recognize it. I kind of had come to know all of the pets that were, that belonged to my immediate neighbors. I didn't recognize this cat at all, but it was cold, it was wet, and it immediately started purring when it jumped into my arm. So I thought, I got to take this thing in. I mean, it's dark outside. Who knows where it's from? It probably wandered off. It's somebody's cat, but I can't just leave it out here. So I brought it into the house and I wrapped it up in a towel, and it just immediately just kind of went to sleep, lying on the bed. It was just like instantly glad to be where it was, obviously. So now I thought, okay, now what do I do? All right, I got to go to work soon. My wife's not here. I can't just put this cat back out. We have to hang on to it until we figure out who it belongs to and see if we can return it. So I called my wife. I called the hospital and got a hold of my wife. Fortunately, she wasn't attending a patient at the time. And I let her know what happened and that I was going to be, when she came home, she was going to find a cat here. And she flipped out immediately. She said, no. I do not want another cat in this house. It's got fleas. Who knows where it's from? I don't want a cat in my house now. And I was a little bit taken aback at how kind of vehement she was to my proposal. I thought maybe she was still reacting to, still grieving for the loss of ours. But I tried to tell her, look, I mean, this thing's a young kitten. I don't know where it's from. Well, who knows what's going to happen if I put it out on its own? She says, I don't care. When I come home, that cat's not going to be there. So, being married long enough to know when to pick my battles, I knew that this wasn't one I was going to win. So I said, okay. And I hung up the phone, and I thought the least I could do was wait until it was light out before I put it back out. So I, got dressed, get ready to go for work. The sun came up, and right before I left, it took the cat to the door and said, you have to find your own way home. Sorry. Just hope you can make it. So I put it down on the street next to the bushes, got in my car, and I left. Went to work. The day passed. I come home. My wife is home. She's, kind of still upset that I even thought about having another cat in the house. But I kind of told her my side of the story, why I thought it was the right thing to do. She calmed down a little bit. And as the evening wore on, got ready to go to bed. And about 11 o'clock, I'm about ready to go upstairs and go to bed. And I hear a cat meowing again. Same meowing from outside the door. My wife goes to the door, opens it up, door, looks out, turns around, and over her shoulder gives me that look. Like, you see what you did, and as she's doing this, in trots the cat again. The whole day had passed, and I don't know where the cat had gone, but it had come right back to this place, right back to our house. And so at this point, it's 11 o'clock on a Friday, and I turn around and say, okay, look. We're going to have to hang on to this cat now, okay? Obviously, somebody has lost one. We'll figure it out. And, we see lost pet posters up all the time. Pets are usually wandering off. Obviously, somebody's going to miss this one. We'll eventually get it back to its owners. But for now, let's just hang on to it and take care of it, okay? It's cruel to kind of keep putting this one out on the street. So you just sighed and said, fine, very well. And so for the next day or so, we had a cat. Now, the thing about cats is, anybody who's had one knows that whenever they enter a new place or a new space, they are very cautious. They have to go and scout the whole place out. They have to go investigate every room, every corner, every nook, every cranny. Their heads up, their eyes are open, their ears are forward, their tails are kind of out at the level. They have to do this just to be sure that there aren't any hidden threats lurking, and also for mapping out the place. And they do this every time they go into a new place or a strange place. This cat didn't do that. This cat was instantly at home with everything about the place. We still had our old cat's toys. It played with our old cat's favorite toys. It did all of the things that our old cat used to do. Like the next morning, we would make the bed. this cat ducked under the bed and was playing with our feet while we did this. It did all of those things. It liked the same kind of food that our cats did. I mean, I went to the store and got some. I did not knowing what else to get. I got the same brand of food that we fed our cat. This cat loved it. And, you know, cats can be very picky about that kind of thing, too. And its habits were pretty much exactly the same as our cats as well. It would sit on my wife's lap and just kind of look at her, to the point where she kind of started to get freaked out. And at one point I noticed that I saw her just look right back at the cat and said, "Stop staring at me. Stop looking at me like that. You're not my cat," which I thought was kind of odd. But the cat was looking right back to her like, "Don't you recognize me?" And we figured it was a girl because it was slight of build and, you know, just kind of figured it was a female cat. But she was acting just like our old cat did, and was just totally just smitten with us. And so at this point, it even started to wear my wife down. And she finally started to kind of warm up to it a little bit, which was surprising given her initial reaction. We spent that Saturday kind of, you know, playing with the cat, feeding with it, caring with it. I talked to a couple of my neighbors and I told them to be on the lookout for people putting up missing cat posters, because, you know, we think we found one that belongs to one of the neighbors. And the next day, Sunday, was a football Sunday. I was watching the local team, the 49ers, and around halftime, I wandered out to go see if I could see if any posters had come up. While I was out wandering the neighborhood, one of my neighbors approached me and told me that he had actually seen somebody, family, putting up posters about a cat that had just gone missing, and gave me the phone number. So I called this family up, and I said, "I hear you got a missing cat. Can you describe it?" And they described this cat to a T, and right down to the collar that it had. Well, I said, "I think we got it. I think we found your cat." The thing of it is that they were a family in the neighborhood, but they weren't anywhere close to us. I mean, the address that they gave us was easily about a mile and a half away and down the hill and I guess a couple of streets. So this cat walked a mile and a half uphill in the dark, turned several corners and navigated a maze to come to our place for some reason, end up here. So it wasn't like it was just like next door and it wandered over here by accident. It seemed like this cat had undergone a journey. And so I mentioned that. I told these people where we lived and they were like, "Wow, she really went a ways." Yeah, they told us her name was Stella. And I gave them our address. And about 10 minutes later, we see them walking up the street. And it was a whole family. It was a mom, a dad, a couple of sons, a couple of kids, and even the dog. They had this big Doberman Pinscher, which everybody seemed to have missed this cat. And so we brought the cat out, and they were all just overjoyed to see them, you know, to see each other. Big reunion and so forth. And I said, "Yeah, you know, it's funny that your cat found our place, because of all the houses in this whole neighborhood, we're still set up for a cat that we don't have anymore. We lost our cat about 7 months ago." And they said, "Well, this cat's 7 months old. We adopted her like, you know, 6 months ago, and she was a month old." I said, "Well, that's a coincidence." And they said, "Yeah. And the funny thing is, when we first adopted her," and this is what really did it for us, Nick, "when we first adopted her," they said, "she had a something that was wrong with her right hind leg. She favored this leg, and we couldn't figure out why. And the vet couldn't figure out why she was constantly limping. It was like a phantom ailment that gradually had disappeared." Well, this, of course, was the same leg that had the tumor on our cat that had eventually took his life. And at that point, my wife and I put everything together, and we realized that when I asked our cat to come back to us, this is what he did. There's no doubt in our minds now that he had come back in the form of another cat who's basically sought his way back to our place just to let us know that he was okay, that he was living life with a loving home in the body of another cat. There's no other explanation for anything that happened that I don't know. What do you think?
Completely convinced.
That's what I mean.
Especially the confirmation of the owners and the location on the leg, the character, everything.
Yeah, that was the kicker for us. I mean, the character was there too, but yeah, the phantom leg ailment was really what did it for us. Yeah, so those are my stories, Nick.
Absolutely fascinating. I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing them.
Well, thank you for having me. It's good to have a forum like this that people can share their stories. I mean, there is definitely more to this world and maybe to other worlds than we're being officially told. And I think if we're fortunate enough to live long enough as a species, we may come to a better understanding of all of these things.
Absolutely. And just about everyone has a story to tell.
That certainly seems to be the case. The more I listen to your show, the more I realize that there are more stories out there. And it was listening to your show that kind of gave me the courage to want to share my stories as well. Because, you know, you tell these stories to the average person and you don't get the same reactions that you would hope to get. But I think more and more it's becoming an accepted thing to do.
Absolutely. I mean, that's wonderful to hear. I mean, our listeners are, you know, they're all like-minded. You know, everyone's looking for answers. And also, it's nice to know that it isn't just this, that there is something else out there, you know?
I think that's very true. That's very true. I think it's important to know that it isn't just this. I mean, if you want to find meaning in your life or meaning in our lives, I think that's a good place to start, that maybe there is more, you know, to our lives than just this life, you know, and just our lives, that we're all part of something bigger and more mysterious than we're able to figure out at the moment. But it doesn't mean that it's not there.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was a kid, and I'll be like watching all the TV shows and watching and looking at pictures of Bigfoots and, you know, things like that. And it was just wondrous. It was wondrous that these things are right there, you know, that we live in two separate worlds. The world we see every day, we go shopping, we go to work, and then there's this other world that we seem to coexist with.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you were, I'm glad that you had me on and allowed me to share the story. And, you know, like I said, my wife knows what I'm doing. She has my blessing, but she didn't want to be a part of it. I'll let her know when the podcast airs, though. So, you know, maybe she can give it a listen on her own time. And maybe she'll be encouraged to call in with some of her own experiences.
She's always welcome. You know, it's always, everyone's always welcome.
That's wonderful. Nick, I hope you are staying safe and hope all your listeners are out there. And I got to say, you're a wonderful host and you're really, really easy to talk to. And so you make it easy for your guests to kind of open up. And that's really a great talent to have. Thanks, Nick. Thanks so much. Take care now.
You're welcome. Take care. That is all we have time for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, help me out and give it a quick share. Thank you to our guests, RO and Mike. And if you want to connect with me by email, you can at ufochronicles@gmail.com or on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. I will be back next week with a witness encounter from the state of Kentucky. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.